I came into Benny's, and there sitting on her desk was an invitation to her 66th high school reunion. Class of 1947. I scooped it up and Betty tried to get it out of my hands. And I said, we're totally going. I want to go to Wichita, Kansas. I want to meet your younger brother, Dickie. I want to go to your high school reunion. I want to hear the stories. I was all in. So we head off to Kansas. And when we land, what impressed me was how big the sky was. I guess living in New York City for a couple of decades, you just see buildings. It's like the land of big sky. And the air is so sweet. And Betty's brother, Dickie, had this beautiful home that he built with his two hands, with a llama farm and a wonderful wife, Barbara, and their adult kids and grandchildren. And he, all the Dotsons were exceptional human beings. And what was wonderful about this trip is I could put the pieces together and figure out why. So we go to our first event and we roll in, and it's a sea of white-haired people and then Betty Dotson and me. I think I was like 33 years old. And instantly everyone came over. They were like, Betty, 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 what's going on? What are you doing? Who's this? And it was good. I could see that she needed that. Like, she needed that, I don't know, acceptance from her peer group, from her immediate, her first peer group. And they're all telling stories. Mm-hmm. And what I realized is that Betty's house was definitely on the wrong side of the tracks. I mean, Wichita has a lot of money because they have the Koch brothers are there. They have oil money. And then they have, you know, the people living in poverty. Betty's family lived just about working class. And everyone would go over to their house. And her mother, Bessie, welcomed everyone. And they would roll in with a bottle of bourbon. They would drink ginger ale and bourbons. And they would sing barbershop quartets. And I Googled around because I'm like, what is the origin of a barbershop quartet? And that's when you have four different parts, voices that harmonize together. Of course, it's African. And they would sing for hours. And all the kids knew that they could ask Bessie anything. Any sex question. Very often they would sit at her kitchen table and Bessie would answer their questions. How remarkable. You know, this is like in the 40s. Betty lived in a very warm family environment with a very strong matriarch. And the best Bessie story that I got on this trip, they were talking about an event, a barbershop quartet event at the local concert hall. And one of the members didn't show up, and you have to have four voices. The crowd is waiting, the room is filled, and all of a sudden they start chanting, Bessie, 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 Bessie. And Betty's mom, Bessie, who was a very petite woman with a really beautiful Clarabeau mouth, Betty used to always say, a little thick in the middle, but she would wear a girdle. And she went marching down the aisle, got on stage, threw it down, and the crowd loved it, and they were all applauding. And it was interesting to watch five people tell me their favorite part of that story with smiles across their faces, their eyes kind of gleaming. You know, Bessie had made such an impression. It's like, how do you get a Betty Dotson? You have to have a Bessie. There was another moment where I was having cocktails and hors d'oeuvres and talking to a gentleman, and he asked if Betty was married. And I said, no, she'd married in the mid-60s, divorced by 1970, and she was single, committed single, as Betty would say. And as we're talking, he's kind of acting shocked. I'm like, well, Betty's very happy. She has her apartment, rent-controlled work. You know, she has me. We have work. She travels the world, and she just ended a 10-year relationship with a 30-year-old man. Like, Betty's doing okay. And as we're going back and forth, he kind of was pressing me, and I said, you know, I just don't think that Betty ever met anyone that she fell in love with head over heels. And he was like, oh no. She was head over heels for Tommy. And Betty had, you know, kind of mentioned Tommy here and again, like when we were going over all the art, she had some portraits of him she had drawn. But she never really told me the whole story. And what he said is that Tommy was from the good part of town, from a very wealthy family, and he had a girlfriend, but he would kind of hook up on the side with Betty. And Betty, you know, lit up when he came in the room, and she was crazy about it. She's 15, 16. And when Betty went to New York to go to art school at 18, Tommy followed her. And I asked Betty about this after, because I'm like, he followed you to New York, you know, like what happened? And she said, well, I got pregnant. And when I told him, he said that horrible thing that no one wants to hear. He said, how do I know it's mine? She's like, in that moment, I knew it was over. And she cut it off. He went back home, married someone else. And she got a kitchen tabletop abortion. Because this is 1950. And I thought about, wow, your first love right out of the gate. Such betrayal and disappointment. Ooh, that hits you hard. You know? I wanted to rip up every picture of Tommy that she had drawn, but she held me back. I was so angry that someone could treat someone like that. You know, here's someone going to live out their life dream and you follow them and then you leave them holding the bag and then blame them and malign them like that, like, oh, you're a slut, jerk. So one night we went out to the country club for dinner and drinks, and in between courses, but he's like, hey, I'll, you know, show you around. So as we're walking around, there's a wall with, I guess, all of the founders or, you know, members of distinction. And there's a portrait of this one guy. And she goes, oh, look, that's Handjob Bob. And I'm like, Handjob Bob? She goes, oh, yeah. And it was interesting because there were a couple of people around us. And when we were calling him Handjob Bob, they kind of, their heads whipped around. So not New York City. And if you don't know, when Betty was, God, 14, 15, Bob would go to her parents' house in his car, shut off the lights, go by Betty's window, and she would crawl out the window in her pajamas, go to the front seat of his car, and he would stimulate Betty's vulva till she had an orgasm. So we called him Handjob Bob. And they would kiss the neck, and she never thought about reciprocating. Like, that wasn't even in the cards. But that was her first partner experience. And it was very positive, and Betty loved it. And she said that when she went back for her 20th high school reunion, Bob was still alive. And he was there with his wife, and she was like, come on, Bob, for old time's sake, give me a hand job. And he was completely offended. And he didn't want to acknowledge that it even happened. So I'm putting this picture together. Betty is very interesting and attractive and sexual, and they all went in, but she's not the right type of woman. So she's the girl on the side. And I learned a lot about Betty's need to be seen and valued in that moment. It was no shock that she would become a trailblazer, because it's kind of like everyone is thinking less of you and you're going to show them that you are everything. And she did. One night during our stay, I don't know how we got our hands on a joint, but we were in a hot tub and we were getting really high. And I'm hearing all these stories and we're talking about her childhood. And this is before we did the memoir. So I was kind of getting the real backstory on everything. And I just saw it. And I just said, Betty, how come you never let yourself fall in love? It wasn't about not finding the right partner. She wouldn't let herself fall in love. And she said, my older brother, Rowan, his death changed everything. Her oldest brother, so it was Rowan, Bill, Betty, and Dickie. Her older brother, Rowan, was, all the Dotson boys were very attractive. I mean, when I look at pictures of them, I'm like, damn, I mean, tall, dark, and handsome, all of them. And she would talk about Rowan, and she would just be kind of in a daydream, you know, kind of high, because she would say, oh, he was a beautiful dancer. And I would beg him and say, Rowan, please dance with me, please. And he never wanted it. But every so often, he'd go, all right. And he'd take her for a spin, a whirl, and she loved it. Like all the Dotson men, every generation, because they were working class, they all went off to war. And that's something that's very interesting. It, you know, we don't think, I didn't think of that because I grew up in a solid middle to upper class. And so no one in my family, no, the generations didn't go to war. But I think for most Americans, that's the story. So Rowan makes it back from the war in one piece, and they're elated. And they went swimming. And Betty was a lifeguard in her teens. And so they went to the local swimming hole. And they're swimming and having. And then Rowan goes to the deeper edge. And then he goes to jump in. And they had mismarked the depth. And so when he dove in, he broke his neck. And didn't come up. And so Betty went flying in. Swam over to him. Pulled him out. Did CPR. And he died in her arms. He literally died in her arms. And she told me, she goes, Carlin, that day, that moment with him in my arms, I vowed I'd never fall in love again. And it really answered the question, because I think her relationship with Eric was really about having a romantic relationship where she was in control and she wouldn't be hurt. And she would get what she wanted, and knowing that he would grow up and go out on his own, make his own way. I'd like to think that in our relationship, she was able to love and be supported and honored. And I saw her off the planet, know that I would always be there. I think about what it was like to be Betty and be let down or have all the love in your life taken away. So her dad was an alcoholic, very happy alcoholic, but he was kind of depressive and not present. She had this wonderful, strong mother, but then her older brother dies in her arms. Her first love says, "Is it? How do I know it's mine?" And then she heads off to New York to make her way as an artist at a time when she said they would all go to the bar, and Jackson Pollock and crew would all debate whether or not women could be artists. And I think it explains Betty's kind of cowgirl mentality, that thick skin and kicking the door and I don't need anyone. And if you read her memoir, people said, like, where's the vulnerability? To be in that generation of women that forged the path, you had a completely disconnect yourself from any sort of sentimental anything. Like you had to shut it off because it hurt so much. So we wrap up the trip and we're headed back and we're at the airport in Kansas. And people had been giving Betty little like gift bags the whole time, and I really didn't pay attention, and she shoved them all into her carry-on. And all of a sudden, she gets flagged at security. And they're like, okay, ma'am, you know, we have to look through your bags. So we're standing there. And there are a lot of people. I guess whatever time we pick to fly, like, everyone's at the little local airport. And so everyone's in security. And people are giving you that look like, oh, God. And all of a sudden, the woman pulls out with a little blue glove, right? A bottle. It looks like a bottle of Bailey's, one of those flat bottles. And it said, hot sex on the front. So I go out loud. I go, Betty, who gave you that bottle of hot sex? And with that, everyone like whips around. They're smiling. They're laughing. The TSA agent is laughing. She holds it up. I'm like, okay, I have to get a picture of this. I take a picture. And it was perfect because it was a heavy weekend. But that was Betty. Like, it was so heavy and it was so deep and it was so real and it was so honest. Kansas was a missing piece to the puzzle. I better understood Betty's journey. I understood her pain. I understood why she made the choices that she did. I wasn't Tommy. I wasn't Rowan. But I danced with her. And we did good work. And we made the world a better place. And now I get to carry it forward.